Anatomy and Physiology, Gulf Coast State College. We're going to continue our discussion of organic compounds today by looking at proteins. Before I go any further, I noticed on the last tape on carbohydrates there was a little bit of lag time between my voice and the pointer sometimes, sort of like lip syncing almost. I had the IT department look at it in great detail. We think we have it resolved. I actually redid that tape a total of four times to get it like it was. If I felt it weren't acceptable, I wouldn't have put it out there. But hopefully with the latest adjustments made as of this morning, that lip syncing issue is completely resolved. So with that being said, let's bust into proteins. And we're going to start with some major functions. Proteins are so critical to the body. The list I have coming up is not a complete list, but it's got some of the major ones that you should all know and take home with you forever. So let's start here at the top. And this one's an easy one. You probably would have guessed this already. It forms the structural framework, not just of our body parts, such as bones and muscles, but all the way down even to our cell membranes. I put a picture of Muscle Man. Here's Muscle Man again, the torso of Muscle Man, to remind you that the proteins in the muscle and the proteins in those underlying bones give a good structural framework to our bodies. Function number two, one you already knew before you took the course, is movement. We'll learn in our course it helps things move all the way down to the cellular level, but the one we all know, of course, is muscle contraction. Without proteins, our muscles couldn't contract and we couldn't move. So those are two easy ones that you already knew or could have guessed before today. Let's do a little bit more advanced stuff since we're A&P. So in the blood, proteins are very important in the blood. They have many functions in the blood we'll learn over time. I'm just going to focus on two of them to begin with. Number one, without proteins, our blood could not clot. And over to the right, I added some more clip art. Believe it or not, on this really cool scanning electron micrograph that almost looks 3D, these red disc-like structures are red blood cells, and these yellowish-tannish threads are clotting proteins that are helping to clot our blood. So, couldn't clot our blood without proteins. Also, speaking of blood, a lot of goodies in our blood are transported through the use of transport proteins. As a matter of fact, hemoglobin is a protein we'll study in great detail, and of course that's what transports the oxygen to our tissue cells. We'll also learn that proteins help to transport certain lipids through our blood, so very important for clotting and transportation of goodies through our blood. Function number four, I want you to know, with a red star in it, and it's our fill in the blank, enzymes, proteins form enzymes, and none of the metabolic processes in our body would work without enzymes. Remember, these are our biological catalysts. So, absolutely know this one, the red star, whether it's a test question or not. Function number five, hormones. Yeah, there are some hormones that are made up of proteins. And as we'll learn later on, hormones control almost everything in our body, all the way down to the nitty-gritty cellular level. As a matter of fact, if mommy or daddy asked you right now, hey, you're big, bad A&P student, you're real smart, what makes this, that, or the other thing work? You could almost always say hormones and be correct. Two of the protein hormones I want you to know, even at this stage of the game, are number one, insulin, and I threw on a picture of clip art of someone injecting herself with insulin. So insulin is a protein hormone, and another protein hormone we hear a lot about in the news these days is growth hormone. So we need both of those hormones in the human body for various metabolic processes, and we really couldn't do without them. So another major function of proteins. The sixth function I want you to know is antibodies are composed of proteins, and you probably knew before you took the course that antibodies help us fight infections. They also help us fight cancers and fight foreign invaders in general in our body. So an extremely important part of our immune system. Function number seven, the last one I'll give you, is buffer. Proteins can function as buffers. As a matter of fact, proteins are the most abundant buffer in our body cells and in our blood. Definitely something for you to take notes on there. Recall from an earlier discussion, our body lives in a very tight pH range. We've got to be in homeostasis. We've got to keep our arterial blood in that 7.35 to 7.45 range, or we will not survive very long in this world. So proteins are a major buffer. Remember what buffers do, a little refresher. This is how important they are. Buffers very quickly but temporarily change or can change a strong acid or a strong base into a weak one. In other words, they help to neutralize things. And that is critical to body function. To give you a practical application of buffers, those of you who might have worked as a lifeguard in a swimming pool, or maybe you got a swimming pool in your house, you got to check the chemicals to make sure the chemicals are right so your pool is nice and comfortable for your guests. And a lot of people think that it's the chlorine, for example, that burns the eyes. And don't get me wrong, if the chlorine is high, yeah, it could burn your eyes. But one of the main things that will really burn your eyes quickly is if the pH is wrong. For example, if the pool is too acidic, that burns right away. And if you've ever worked on a pool and you adjusted the pH, one of the things you did to help neutralize acid was dump in baking soda. Baking soda is not a protein, but anyway, I'm just trying to make a point here how important buffers are. But baking soda you can find in the pantry of your kitchens at home, and that helps to buffer solutions. So a critical function to keep us alive. Let me give you another example of how proteins work as buffers. Well, I threw a cheeseburger down your lower right here, a little clip art, and of course that burger's got a lot of protein in it. Many of you may know that in our stomach is extremely strong hydrochloric acid, a pH of like 1 or 2. And you know, a low pH actually means a high acid. Because if you recall the pH scale, the person who invented it was living in backwards land. So the lower the pH, the higher the acid. And just so it turns out, when we ingest proteins, which are very common in the American diet, when that burger gets in our belly, it does help to buffer the acid in our stomach. And as you'll see when you study digestive physiology, that's an important part of the digestive process that we will learn. So yes, look at all these functions. I know a lot of you right now are thinking, oh my gosh, this is so much to remember. And yes, in A&P, that's going to be the story from the start to the finish. We got a lot to learn, because you can't take care of patients until you understand the building blocks. So we need memorization techniques, don't we? That's why I throw off the visuals off to the right. I enjoy them. I hope they help you remember things. But I'm going to throw out another mnemonic here for you to help remember all these functions of proteins. The first two are easy because you knew that before you came here. But what about these last five functions? I have a way to remember them. Your brains right now, you're probably thinking, man, my brain is dizzy. My brain is getting blown away. My brain is fried. I'm going to need to go into rehab to remember all this stuff. It's making me so, get me so mixed up. No, you're not going to have to go into rehab. You're going to have to go into behab. See? Capital B-E-H-A-B. Behab. That's my mnemonic. That's right. I stayed up till like 3 o'clock in the morning trying to figure out how to remember those five more complicated functions of proteins. And I hope that works for you. It works for me. The B stands for blood, for clotting, and for transportation of goodies. The E stands for enzymes. The H stands for hormones. A for antibodies, and B for buffer. Now look, I throw out mnemonics every now and then to help us remember stuff. And I know not every mnemonic I give is going to work for everybody, but you've got to come up with something. They're just age-old memorization techniques. I'm no smarter than anyone in my classrooms or anyone listening to these tapes. I just sat down and I put in the time and I came up with all kind of corny memorization techniques. And to tell you the truth, the cornier they are, the longer they stick in your brain. And you got to start coming up with your own, because the ones you come up with on your own are the ones that will really stay with you. So I'll throw out some ideas and ones that maybe work for me and some of you. But when you come up with your own, that's really when I know I've kind of done my job, when you start coming up with your own techniques. Let's look at the protein structure. Now, don't get nervous on this slide. I'm not going to ask you to draw a protein, but you should be able to recognize the basic parts of a protein if I describe them to you or show you a picture on the test. Same thing with carbohydrates. So let's bust it down again. What are proteins? They are polymers. What's a polymer? Poly means many, mer means parts. They are polymers of amino acids. And that's our fill in the blank, and you've heard of amino acids probably even before you took this course. The body uses roughly 20 amino acids. Half of them are essential. What does that mean? All essential means is we have to get these by eating them or taking supplements. The body cannot create them internally. What do non-essential amino acids refer to? It doesn't mean that you don't need them. It just means that the body can create them on their own. You don't have to eat them or ingest them. The general formula for an amino acid is down below. Take a look at that picture, but I'm going to bust it down in detail on the next slide and tell you what you need to know. Note, however, a general theme. All proteins contain HONC, the four most common elements in the human body. Remember our mnemonics, remember that was HONC. The proteins contain some other substances as well, but they all contain these four major elements. On this slide, we're going to break down an amino acid into its parts that, yes, you need to know. First of all, shaded here in blue, I'm circling it now with my arrow, hopefully in sync, is what we call the amino group. How do I remember? It's the amino group. When I spell the word amino, I make a big capital N, and that reminds me it's the group with the nitrogen in it. Second, off to the right in this diagram, I am circling now, shaded in an orangish color, what's called the carboxyl group. I always remember when I see it, it's the carboxyl group because it has the C in it. It has the carbon in it. So C for the carbon in the carboxyl group, and I never forget it. Then notice, off of this central carbon, one of our covalent bonds is attached to what's called an R group. The R group is also referred to as the side chain. It's also referred to as the variable group. And it's what makes one amino acid different from another. On this slide, those of you who are paying attention, you may have noticed that under the amino group, it says base. And under the carboxyl group, it says acid. Because this goes back to one of our major functions of proteins being able to act as buffers. So it's this amino group that can act as a base. And remember, if you mix an acid and a base together, move towards neutral, which is what we want to do. If we're a buffer, we want to neutralize a situation. So it just so turns out that the most common problem our body faces all day, every day, is our cells are making acids. We got to get rid of the acid or we don't make it to another day. So this amino group has the ability to bind, to suck up an acid, an H plus ion, out of solution and therefore help neutralize an acidic solution. On the other end of the deal, occasionally the body may encounter a situation where it has too much base. That's also called an alkaline solution. A basic solution is also called alkaline. They're synonyms. And in that situation, if you need to neutralize a basic solution or basic fluid in your body, the carboxyl group has the ability to let go or release this hydrogen ion as an H plus into solution. In other words, it can donate acid into a body fluid if it's needed to help neutralize or buffer a basic solution. So that's some additional importance on this slide. That's kind of advanced at this stage of the game, but it's something you need to know. So how do we make proteins? Let's talk about how we make protein. It's very similar to what we talked about when we were making our polysaccharides. Dehydration synthesis forms peptide bonds, and when we bond together multiple amino acids with multiple peptide bonds, we form a string, a polymer, that we call a protein. So let's give an example. Here your book has an amino acid called glycine. It has a second amino acid called alanine. And then what we're doing through the process of dehydration, we remove this H2O that's shaded in green that I'm circling with my pointer. When we remove the water, that's the dehydration, in the process, we form a covalent bond between those two amino acids, and that bond is called a peptide bond. And we have synthesized a peptide. And as you string more and more and more of these peptides together, you form a protein. I love the name of the bond, by the way. Peptide bond starts with a P, and peptide bonds form proteins with a P. What about the opposite process? Notice this is a reversible reaction, because when we eat our hamburger, when the burger gets in our belly and in our intestines, the opposite happens, which you know now is hydrolysis, which means by adding water, we lyse or break apart the peptide bonds, and we, if you will, we dissolve that protein into its basic components, which are amino acids. So digestion is the opposite process. We add water, we also add some digestive enzymes, and in the end we pop the peptide bonds and we are left with our amino acids that, again, at that point in time, we can absorb into our system for our body cells to use, the same way we busted apart our complex carbohydrates into our monosaccharides. Let's look at some levels of structural organization in proteins. It's really not that difficult. Some of you might think it's trivial pursuit, but I'll show you the importance of knowing the four levels of structural organization in proteins. The first level, fortunately for my pea brain, is called the primary one, and primary means the first one, and it is the first one. Primary structure means the linear sequence of amino acids that form the polypeptide chain. I'll show you a picture on the next slide, because visuals, of course, are key here. The second level is called, you guessed it, the secondary structure. The secondary structure is usually a twisting or folding of the amino acids in the polypeptide chain, and they form a shape, usually a helix, which is sort of a twisted thing, or a pleated sheet, which is kind of like a folded up piece of notebook paper. The third level is called the tertiary structure. Tertiary refers to third, and it is the third level, and it's the three-dimensional shape of the polypeptide chain. It's where the chain folds in on itself. A nice picture coming up to demonstrate it. The fourth level is the quaternary structure. Quat, root word, means four, so this is the fourth level. And here's how this goes. In proteins that contain more than one polypeptide chain, the quaternary structure refers to the arrangement of one polypeptide chain in relation to another. For example, hemoglobin. Yeah, hemoglobin is actually a combination of four polypeptide chains all intertwined. So let's take a look at these. First, this is the primary structure. Very simply, it's the linear sequence of the amino acids linked together by peptide bonds. And a lot of you might be saying, big deal, so what? I can memorize that. It's easy, but I'll never use it or see it in my real life. And here's an example of where you would be wrong. On this picture, trying to show you, well, there's a normal red blood cell, almost looks like a donut a little bit. But look off to your right. Here's what's called a sickled one, because it's shaped like a sickle. If you don't know what a sickle shape is, if you ever seen a picture of the Grim Reaper, they got that curved metal blade, or if you ever seen a sling blade, that some people call that a sickle. So a sickle shape is just a shape of that sling blade or that curved blade that you've seen on a picture of the Grim Reaper. Which reminds me of a true story. I just can never resist saying this story whenever I talk about the sickle shape. When I was 5 years old, my dad, he hated to mow the lawn. He'd let it grow about a month, and then he'd want to mow it, but it'd be waist high, so the lawnmower wouldn't work. And he would tell me, he would say, hey, and I was only five, he'd say, hey, Lee, would you mind going out in the garage, getting out the sickle, and knocking back the grass so I could mow it? So there I was, 5 years old. I'd get out the sling blade, and I slashed that grass back, and I got pretty good at it. But I think about it now. I mean, I got four children. I kind of forget their ages, something like 28. 22, 20, and eight years old. Yeah, we got a good spread there going. And in any case, I can't even think of my 8 year old, let alone when he was five, saying, yeah, go get that sling blade and go out and start slashing things. I mean, these days, I don't know, wouldn't that be like child endangerment or something like that? In any case, you'll never forget what a sickle shell means. A sickle shape. Means like in a sickle cell, and you'll use it again, believe it or not, when you study brain anatomy. In any case, this is a scanning electron micrograph, which is just so cool. I mean, sick looking photograph, because it's kind of like 3D, and it's 3,000 power, and it's in a patient with sickle cell anemia. The sickle cell anemia occurs due to a single point gene mutation, and that mutation causes the primary sequence of the peptide to change. And what happens is the amino acid valine is substituted for the amino acid glutamine. And just that single substitution in the linear sequence causes an abnormal hemoglobin. So that when, usually under circumstances of stress or heat or acidosis or low oxygen levels, the hemoglobin changes shape, and so it starts to cause the blood cells to form the crescent shape, and they can't get through the small capillaries to the tissues. And what happens is the capillaries get blocked and the tissues die, and you'll see sickle cell patients come to see you in the ER with severe pain. We call those sickle cell crises. You'll learn how to treat that. Unfortunately, the treatment is relatively limited at the time of this recording, but what's happening when they're having these episodes of pain is they're actually killing off their tissues. You know, when people have heart attacks, for example, they have chest pain. That's because their heart is lacking blood and the tissue is hurting. When sickle cell patients come to see you in a sickle cell crisis with all those pain, probably their tissues are dying. They could stroke out their brains, they could stroke out their eyes, and one of the things they often stroke out is their spleen. They kill off their own spleens. They come in with multiple episodes of belly pain, and at autopsy, many sickle cell patients don't even have a spleen. They actually killed it, and instead of being a big, red, juicy thing about the size of your fist, it's like a little scarred down nubbin about 2 inches in size because they killed it off. All because of an alteration in the primary structure of their protein. What about secondary structure? Remember, secondary structure refers to either a twisting, this is called a helix, or a pleated sheet. It looks like a folded piece of paper to me. So this is an example of what is meant by the secondary protein structure. The tertiary level refers to the three-dimensional shape of a polypeptide chain. And so you could see this polypeptide, it's got some helices in it, it's got some pleated sheets in it, but also the entire polypeptide chain is folding in on itself in various ways and directions. Brings us to the fourth level of organization, the quaternary structure. Notice we have a blue polypeptide chain mostly to your left, a gray polypeptide chain mostly to your right, and they're intertwined with each other. Hemoglobin is actually made up of four polypeptide chains all intertwined with each other, and it gives the ability of your hemoglobin to actually carry a tremendous amount of oxygen molecules. This is just a summary slide. There's nothing new on the slide, but it puts it all together. It shows you primary, secondary, tertiary, and quaternary structure all on one slide, if that visual helps you. The shape of a protein is critically important. It's critically important to one of the major functions. Remember, I told you we had to go to instead of rehab, we had to go to BHAB to remember all the functions. Well, the E in BHAB was for enzyme, and no metabolic reactions in the body practically could ever take place without protein enzymes to facilitate the metabolic processes. And the enzymes shown here, for example, in a drawing, must have the exact proper shape to do their job or they won't work. Here's an example of an enzyme called sucrase. Remember, ACE is often the last three letters of an enzyme. And sucrase tells you that this enzyme is an enzyme that will bust apart sucrose, just like lactase would bust apart lactose. So here's how it works. Our enzyme sucrase has the perfect shape to match up like a lock and a key with the disaccharide known as sucrose. Sucrose fits in there very nicely, again, like lock and key or hand and glove. And with that orientation properly made, or that connection properly made, then we mix in a little bit of water, and by the process of hydrolysis, that enzyme will bust apart sucrose into its two monosaccharides that you know are glucose and fructose. Again, if that enzyme was deformed, this reaction could not take place. Love this picture. This is a molecular model of an enzyme. In this case, it's called hexokinase, which can metabolize glucose. Here is glucose, which is called the substrate. Don't worry about that right now. Just worry that this model is showing you the exact perfect lock and key match of the enzyme with the thing it's supposed to be metabolizing. And if that shape were not perfect, this chemical reaction could not occur. That brings me to something. You need to know the meaning of denature. What does denature mean? If you denature something, you change the shape of something. And if you denature a protein, you change its shape. And now you know if you change its shape, it won't work. Here's an example of denaturing protein, frying an egg, right? You crack the egg, you put it in a pan, it turns, you know, colors and stuff, and you denatured it. That's what's happening when you're cooking with heat that egg, you denatured it. And once you do that, it's not going to work anymore, right? I mean, you're not going to have no more chance of a chicken, right? You denature the protein, it's not going to work. And this is what happens, for example, if someone has a high fever. That's going to denature the proteins in the brain and fry their brain. I don't know if any of you remember that old commercial. It used to say, here's your brain, and then here's your brain on acid, and would show the fried eggs. Well, if the brain is exposed to too much heat, toxins, or acid, acid too. If your blood becomes acidotic, it will literally fry your proteins, fry your brain cells, fry your enzymes, and our body parts will become damaged, or we may cease to exist. Finally, to end this section, one of these beautiful interactions animations. It's a link from your textbook. I love working through these videos. I hope you do. The visuals are great. The videos are great. Once again, if these links ever break down, sometimes they do, let me know. I'll contact the book publisher right away and see if we can get them up and running. That's all I had, I think, on proteins. Next time, we will start on some lipids.